1 Corinthians 10, from verse 1 to verse 13. What do you think of history? Most people, I think, have little regard for history. They probably think it's boring. I wonder how many Christians are aware of biblical history, church history. And I wonder how many believers think that the history of God's people, of his dealings with God's, with his people, is a boring, unnecessary interest. Well, this chapter will tells us that the knowledge of history and the use of history is an essential for God's people. Paul says, I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers, that our forefathers, and then he goes into details of historical events. The apostle here is taking the history of Israel and applying it, using it, working on it, setting it out before the people at Corinth that they might learn from that history and they might learn to avoid the errors, the mistakes, the failures, the sins of Israel. Repeatedly throughout the Old Testament, the Psalms, you will read it, repeatedly though throughout the Old Testament, God calls Israel to remember their history. Our fathers have told us. Our fathers have told us. Do what you did in their days, and so on. And the Israelites, or at least the spiritual among them, were forever applying their history, remembering their history, using their history, turning back to their history, and calling upon God to repeat his acts of power and wonders, as he had done in past ages. And we should be likewise. We should be given to know our history. I'm glad that I have been able to write at least one book on church history, Battle for the Church. But I refer to it in my discourses and in my other books. We should know what God has done in past times and learn from it. What Paul does here, he does the same as Hebrews 3 and 4. He takes the history of Israel, leaving Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, entering the wilderness, passing through the wilderness, and so on. And he makes this point that our forefathers were all under the cloud, and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They were united, that's what the word means there, to Moses. In, under the cloud, the pillar of cloud and fire, and then they passed through the Red Sea, and they were delivered from Egypt. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. In other words, they ate the manna, they had the water in the wilderness, and it typified Christ to them. And so they had all these advantages. They were with Moses, they left Egypt, they crossed the Red Sea, they entered the wilderness, they had the manna, they had the water in the wilderness, and it was all telling them about Christ, Christ, Christ. The Old Covenant, of course, is foreshadowing, picturing, typifying, showing, teaching, instructing about Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them. Their bodies were scattered over the desert. They died in the wilderness. Why? Hebrews 3 and 4 tells us. Because they did not believe. Now, these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts and so on. These things served as examples or types or paradigms or models. The Old Covenant, Israel, serves as a paradigm, a model, a type, a picture to us of ourselves and of Christ. Of the gospel. What can we learn from this? The parallels must not be over-pushed, but there are parallels here. There are two major applications of this history. first and foremost, by far the most important here, the more important of the two, is this. He applies it to believers. These things occurred as examples to keep us, you Corinthians, me, all believers, from certain things. Believers must learn by the history of Israel. But of course there is an application to the unbeliever, especially to the unbeliever who is associated with believers, who is somewhat religious, who is somewhat attached to the believing body. Not converted, but attending, interested, associated, in some kind of relationship with. I don't know how to word it. It's vague, but it's definite. It's a contradiction there, I know. It's not a full saving commitment to Christ. It's not trusting Christ. It's the warning of Hebrews 3 and 4. But what are the warnings here? What did we learn from Israel's history? They did not set their hearts on Christ. They did not set their hearts on spiritual matters. They set their hearts on the evil things. That's what verse 6 says. These things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. They set their hearts on evil things. And their history is to warn us as believers not to set our hearts on evil things. It's a challenge to the unbeliever. You live for evil things. Evil outside of Christ. Believer, we must set our hearts on Christ. Unbeliever, you must set your heart on Christ. The unbeliever for salvation. The believer to go on with Christ. It's our hearts, you see. It's not just our minds. This is very important. Sandemanianism is rampant. What is Sandemanianism? You simply accept in the mind the teaching of Scripture. You accept the doctrine. You believe in that sense. You assent to the promises. You assent to what God has said. And that is saving. Oh no. Paul wants us to set our hearts. It's our hearts that are important. We must not set them on evil things. We must set them on Christ. Do not be idolaters, verse 7, as some of them were. Idolatry. They indulged in pagan revelry, in material things, sitting down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in pagan revelry. They were sexually immoral, verse 8, and in one day 23,000 of them died. Verse 9, they tested the Lord, and they were killed by snakes. Verse 10, they grumbled against God. Now here are the things that we learn from Israel's history. They were grumblers. They were immoral. They tested God. They were pagan. They were sexually deviant. They were carnal, material. They set their hearts on evil things. They were idolaters. Now you may say, well, we don't do these things. Ah, they're not entirely unknown amongst professing believers. But is the principle here? Is our heart set on Christ? Are we set on material things? Immorality. Grumbling against God. Yeah. Testing the Lord. Giving up to carnality of every kind. Paganism. These things happened to them, verse 11, as examples, and were written down as warnings for us, on whom the fulfillment of the ages has come. The fulfillment, you see, that's the whole point. The new covenant, Christ has come and fulfilled the old covenant. The word fulfilled, you'll find it in Matthew 5, you'll find it throughout the New Testament. Fulfilled, fulfilled, fulfilled. Christ fulfilled the law, and he rendered it obsolete. But the truth is, the old covenant has much to teach us by way of paradigm and by type, by illustration, by model, by example, by illustration. And here it is again. Israel had many advantages They saw Christ if they would only see him. They had Christ if they would only have him. He was there in symbolic form, in the manna, in the waterness, in the water, in the passing through the wilderness, in the Red Sea, and in all these ways, in the Passover. Christ was being spoken to them. Christ was being revealed to them. In the Sabbath they had, God was speaking to them about Christ if they would only see it. Some did. Abraham, who predated the law, but he saw Christ. David did. Others did. Moses did. He chose Christ, the riches of Christ, being despised with Christ rather than the riches of Egypt. But we have the full revelation, and they're written down, these old covenant examples, and we have the new covenant written down now through the apostles. And all these things have come to us. The fulfillment of the ages is ours now. We have Christ in the reality. The shadows have given way. The Sabbath, the festivals, the feasts, the Jewish history is given way now to the reality of Christ. And we must set our hearts on Christ. We must walk with him. If we're unbelievers, we set our hearts upon Christ for salvation. We must trust Christ. We must have a real heart experience with him. It's not enough to be associated with the believers. There were many who were associated with Israel who died. In fact, the overwhelming majority, all but two, died in the wilderness. It's a remarkable statistic. But the main thrust here is for the believer. If you think you're standing firm, says the apostle in verse 12, be careful that you don't fall. You're going to be tempted. You're going to be tried. Israel stumbled and fell. Israel failed to keep step with God. But God has made the way for you to escape. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. God has made this provision for you. There is a way of escape. You can, but you must set your heart upon Christ. You must set your heart against paganism, carnality, materialism, living for this age, living the way the world does. There is our responsibility here. Learn from history. Israel failed. Learn that God is gracious, merciful, he will keep. But you do not trade one against the other. It's not all down to your own effort. Oh, I can do it myself. You can't. But neither is it fatalism. Oh, God can see to me, and if he does, well, he does. If he doesn't, he doesn't. No, you have your responsibility too, brother and sister. So then, there are two applications here. For us as believers, we have to persevere. We have to keep seeing Christ, keep looking to Christ, setting our hearts upon Christ, trusting Christ, walking with Christ, obedient to Christ, trusting in God's mercy to preserve us, crying out for help, protect us, defend us, Lord, and he will. But we have our duty and our responsibility to keep our hearts and minds devoted to Christ. Unbeliever, the application is to you. Don't be a lookalike Christian. Don't be attached to Christianity. Come to Christ. Set your heart upon Christ. Trust him. Call upon the name of the Lord, and you will be saved. I will close with a word, a hymn by William Gadsby. But before I do, let me remind you of the saying of Hegel. The one lesson we learn from history is that we do not learn from history. The one lesson we learn from history is that we do not learn from history. I'm afraid history is full of examples. We make the same mistakes over and over again. Let us not make these mistakes in our life. Believer, let us not make them. Unbeliever, learn from Israel. And now Gadsby's hymn. Pause, my soul, and ask the question, art thou ready to meet God? And here's the line I want. Am I made a real Christian, washed in the Redeemer's blood? Have I union with the Church's living head? Am I quickened by his Spirit? Live a life of faith and prayer, trusting wholly to his merit, casting on him all my care, daily panting in his likeness to appear. If my hope on Christ is stayed, let him come when he thinks best. O my soul, be not dismayed. Lean upon his loving breast. He will cheer thee, he will cheer thee with the smilings of his face. But if still a total stranger to his precious name and blood, thou art on the brink of danger. Canst thou face a holy God? Think and tremble. Think and tremble. Death is now upon the road. I do not want you to be ignorant, says Paul. Learn from Israel. Learn that God keeps his people. But learn from Israel's mistakes and do not repeat them. Be faithful to Christ if you are in him, and come to Jesus and be a real Christian if you are not.